All right, Shabbos, say good morning. Good morning. We have a lot to do today. Beautiful, beautiful daf. So we are picking up, today's daf is Samech Aleph 61. We are picking up on Samech Amud Beis 60b, the last line. So remember again, the Mishnah said, a man says to a woman, become a kudeshes to me on the condition that I'm going to show you a base core of land, right? And he takes her to a beautiful open valley, right? Filled with fields. Only one problem is, he doesn't own any of them. So the halacha is, she's not nekudeshes. Why? Because we understand that when he says, I'm going to show you a field, what is he saying? He says, I'm going to show you my field. I'm going to show you a field that I own. So it says, Gemara Pshita, isn't that obvious? Lo tzricha denakit bidistura. So this says the Gemara, we're talking about a case where he shows her a field that he doesn't own, but he does have a sharecropping arrangement. So I might have thought that because he has a sharecropping arrangement, as a sharecropper, he does have a partial ownership over the final produce. So I might have thought again that gives him a quasi ownership over the field, and therefore that satisfies the tenai. Kamash molan, that is not the case. So the sponsorship was not for today.
Tomorrow.
Okay. We'll say also, it goes without saying, I should have started with this, that today is Yom HaZikaron. Today is the day, ultimately, again, that we remember all of those who have fallen defending, establishing the State of Israel as well, victims of terror. We sometimes take Eretz Yisrael, or I should say Medina Yisrael, for granted. You know, most of us here grew up in a world that automatically had the State of Israel. But the truth is, if we think about it, the fact that it's a brand new fixture in the continuum of Jewish history, and it's nothing less than a nes nigla, nothing less than an overt miracle. However you feel it figures into the panorama of Messianic redemption. It's something absolutely amazing, and mamish in matana from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But the reality is, we have this matana because, as we say by Bris Milah, we only have this matana literally because of the blood of thousands who have been Moser Nefesh. So we should, Miratz Hashem, dedicate our learning Le'iloi Nishmasam for all of those who have fallen defending, establishing the State of Israel, all the victims of terror. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the Neshamas will have an Aliyah and their families in a Chama.
Amen.
Says the Gemara, Gabe Hekdish Tinat. So now we're going to get into an interesting discussion regarding Hekdish. So when it comes to consecrated property, top of Samech Aleph. So Makdish Sadeu. So we're talking about over here where a person is going ahead and was Makdish, he consecrated his Steachuza. Steachuza is ancestral land. So he was Makdish his Steachuza, and now he wants to go ahead and redeem it. So the Torah gives a particular formula for redemption of Steachuza. So if he's being Makdish, so if he consecrated it, and now he wants to go ahead and redeem it, so Bishas HaYovel, and they're both saying, this is all assuming that this redemption is happening in a Yovel year. Now, the reason for that is Rashi points this out. If you look at Rashi, Bishas HaYovel, Bizman Shayovel Nohig, Shekol Steachuza Piyon, So without getting into all the details now, when Yovel is in effect, there is a formula for redeeming fields. Now the reason for that is because, remember, essentially when Yovel is in effect, you have no real, this is true, we'll say very much, you know, in Israel today, interestingly enough, you don't really buy property. You don't really buy land. The government owns land. You enter into long-term leases. See, interestingly enough, that's the way it worked during Yovel as well. Because remember, all ancestral lands went back in the 50th year, so you never really bought land. You engaged in long-term leases relative to Yovel. As such, when Yovel is in effect, what ends up happening over here is there is almost like a set price the Torah has that corresponds to the number of years between the purchase and Yovel, corresponding to the actual crop of the land. So says the Gemara, when Yovel's not in effect, that's when land real estate transactions look a little bit different. So a person is going ahead and redeeming his field during the time of Yovel, not during a Yovel year, but when Yovel is in effect. So nosin bizera chomer, so on chamishim shekel kasef. So I will say what you do is, the way you evaluate the land is based on produce. So what you do is, you give 50 silver shekel for every kur of barley, for every kur of grain that the field is able to produce. So the value of the field is tied to its agricultural output. So for every single chomer is a kur, every single chomer, every single kur of grain that the field is able to go ahead and produce, you pay 50 silver pieces to the Beis HaMikdash as a redemption price. Hayu nikayim amukim asara tfachim. So we'll say, so now this is interesting. So now the question is, how do you go ahead and calculate, or what gets put into the calculation of the surface area of the land? So hayu nikayim amukim asara tfachim. So if you had a nikayim, literally are like clefts, holes in the ground. If you had holes in the ground that are 10 tfachim or more, ein nimdodin ima. So they are not counted as part of the surface area of the field. Pachus mikan, less than 10 tfachim, nimdodin ima. Ultimately, they're counted as part of the field. So says the Gemara, va'avinan ba. Now, what the Gemara is saying over here is the following. What the Gemara is saying is that if you are makdish a field, your ancestral field. So let's say I have a cleft in the ground. Is that the right word? A cleft? Yeah, like a hole. So I have a cleft in the field. That's what they'll say. That's more than 10 tefachim. What the Gemara essentially is telling me is what? Is that that's not included in the Hekdesh. In other words, that's reckoned as a separate, independent area, not included as part of the Hekdesh. I'm sorry? Depth. So says the Gemara, v'havinan ba nihid v'hadi ara lo kadshu nekadshei v'ape nafshayu. So I don't understand, even if you want to say that, because I've also now, what the Gemara seems to be saying is that if the cleft is 10 tefachim or more, that lemaisa, again, essentially it's reckoned as its own rishos. And therefore, again, it's not part of the original act of Hekdesh. So says the Gemara, that's fine if you want to understand that it's not part of the original act of Hekdesh. Why doesn't it become Hekdesh simply on its own? Look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says, Mehide bahadi aralo kadshi, lios nimdodin bekarka, shove lios kitafer shalem, nimdod la'alos b'cheshben, nikdosh ba'api nafshayu, lios nimdodin lefi mashi yishpohen, v'lo ya'alem madron shalahen b'cheshben. So I understand at the end of the day, if you want to say that because it becomes a little bit like a separate domain, it's not included in the cheshbon of the rest of the field, but why is it not reckoned on its own cheshbon? In other words, Rabbi say, even if you have a cleft, you could have stuff that's planted in there, depending on what the width of it is. You could have stuff that's planted in there. So why can't you go ahead and make a, even if you don't want to include it in part of the cheshbon of the field, why don't you include it as its own cheshbon? To which the Gemara says, v'chi tema, kama de lo havi beis kor lo chashiv. Well, maybe you'll say that any parcel of land that is not a beis kor is not reckoned, is not considered at all for redemption purposes. Or minhu ba'orei kasha sada. Why does the pasuk say sada? Ma tam lomar lefi shenemar zera chomer seorim bechamishim. Because Rabbi said the pasuk says, now the whole pasuk reads like this. The whole pasuk says ve'imisteach uzaso yakdish ish laHashem. If a person is makdish his sedei achuza to Hashem, v'haya erkecha lefi zero, then the value of it will be in accordance with its what it produces. Zera chomer seorim shekel kasef. Every core of wheat that it produces is worth 50 silver pieces, or essentially every parcel of land that could produce one core of wheat is worth 50 silver pieces. So what the Gemara is asking over here is, why do you need the first phrase of ve'im miste achuzaso? You could write, first of all, imi achuzaso. Why do you need the word soda? To which the Gemara says, ma tamulomar lefishine emar zera chomer sorim bechamishim, because the pasuk says that how do you evaluate the land? It's every parcel of land that could produce one core of wheat has a value of 50 silver pieces. I only know, therefore, that hekdish works if you are being makdish a parcel of land that is capable of producing a core of wheat. Minayin l'rabos lesech v'chatzi lesech so'ah tarkov v'chatzi tarkov v'afilu rova. But say, how do I know? These are all examples of smaller amounts of land. How do I know that even if you're makdish, a smaller amount of land, that A, the land is still hekdish, and B, there is a formula for redemption? Talmud Lomar, therefore the pasuk says, sedeh, or sada mikol makom. Therefore, I will say, the pasuk says that what? Therefore, the pasuk says, sada, to tell you that what? Any land that you are makdish, ultimately, again, there is a formula for redemption. Amar Mar Ukva Bar Chama, So going back to what we said before, so why is it? Now we just said that what? We said that if I go ahead and I'm makdish my field, so what happens? So the clefts that are more than 10 tefachim are not included as part of my hekdish. So the Gemara says, so the havamina was, well, maybe that's because if it's less than a base core, then by definition it just doesn't become hekdish. We've now established that what? That is not the case. Even the smallest parcels of land are subject to laws of hekdish. If that's the case, so why isn't the cleft, even if you want to say that the cleft is not part of the hekdish of the larger field, why doesn't it just become hekdish on its own when I make the declaration? To which the Gemara says, Amar mar ukva bar chama, hacha b'nikoy melei mai maskinon. Oh, what are we talking about, Avir Abosai? We're talking about clefts that are filled with water. If that's the case, mishum delav b'nei zirianinu. So we'll say, because they are filled with water, therefore, of course, there's no ability to go ahead and plant in them. And if you look at Rashi, Rashi is delav b'nei zirianinu, the kasuv ha-kasuv zera. Umidi the lav bnei zuyaninu ena niftim bedamim halalu ela b'shavia. Chazavos said the gzeres hakasev is that this formula for redemption only applies to areas that are plantable, right? That could yield crop, but areas that cannot yield crop ultimately again are not redeemed with this formula. Rather, they are redeemed ultimately again just in accordance with their value. Dekanami diktani. We can read this into the brayse as well. Dumyo dislam gevoim, because remember the brayse included clefts and very high rocks. Just like high rocks, I will say you can't plant on them, so too, again, the clefts that we're talking about, you can't plant on either. What's the type of cleft on which you can't plant on? It must be what? That it's filled with water. Shmamino. Ihach efilipachos mikan. Nami. So, to which the Gemara says, well, if that's the case, that it's filled with water, then why do you need it to be, I have a depth of 10 tefachim? Even less than 10 tefachim, if it's filled with water, what? It's lav b'nei zriyaninu. It's not capable of being used for planting purposes. To which the Gemara says, no, because at a certain point in time, hano na'agoni da'ara mikru. So we'll say these are called, if you look at Rashi, negoim da'ara mikru hanekoim karyon agonos. These are called, we'll say, agonos are basins. These are considered to be the basins of the land, which is another way of saying, there's no land. Land is never completely flat, meaning all land has its topographical anomalies. Right. Thank you. Right. So therefore, again, you have to. There's a certain understanding that it's not going to be flat. You're going to have depressions in the land. What happens in those depressions? Often water collects. So if it's less than 10 tefachim, Rabosai, that's not considered to be something separate and distinct from the field. It's considered to be a quote-unquote basin of the field. To which the Gemara says, same idea. Hano nami nagani de'ara mikru. Shidra de'ara mikru. Just like if you have a stone or something that sticks out of the ground, but it's less than 10 tefachim high, literally it's considered to be like a spine of the land. So shedra da'aran in mikru. In other words, that we don't expect land to be absolutely straight or absolutely flat. We understand that there'll be depressions and some elevations. And therefore, the mice, as long as they're within 10 tefachim, they're considered to be as part of the ground. So the Gemara says, Gabi, so listen to this. Gabi mecher tanan. We'll say, listen to this, by a sale of a land. So far we're talking about hekdish. So what seems to come out by hekdish is the following. That halacha lemaisa, by hekdish, I will say, if you were to go ahead and have a piece of land that ultimately, well, actually, let's read the next line, then we'll bring it all together. Gabi mechatran, yet by a sale. This is by real estate sale, we learned. Ha'omer lecha, ve'ro base core afar ni mocher lecha. So we'll say, let's say, I say to my friend, I'm selling you a base core of land. It's an area of land. I'm selling you a core of land. So, v'hayu sham nekayim amukim asara tefachim, o selo'im gavo asara tefachim, Ein nimdadin ima. Supposed to listen to this. If I tell you that I'm selling you a base core of land, and it turns out that I give Reuven the keys to the gate of the land, he goes in, he checks, and what does he see? That in the middle of the base core is a cleft that goes down 10 tefachim. So what's the halacha? That cleft of 10 tefachim is not counted as part of the base core. So we'll say, what does that mean on a practical level? So let's say Reuven comes out, you didn't sell me a base core. You sold me a base core minus the cleft. So I don't want this. You didn't follow through on the details of the sale. I'm voiding the sale. So we'll say, what's that law, huh? What's that law, huh? So the law is on Reuven's side. He's right. I didn't sell him what we agreed to. I agreed to sell him a base core of land. I sold him a base core minus a cleft. Or again, a base core with a ridge of rocks that are above 10 tefachim. Therefore, again, I didn't satisfy the criteria of the sale. pachos mikan. If the cleft, however, is less than 10 tefachim, or the stone, the stone elevation is less than 10 tefachim, then nimdadinima. Then they are counted ultimately again as part of the land. Va'amar mar ukva barchama afapi she'in meleim mayim. Then I was saying, here's what's interesting. This is true even though what? Even if the cleft is not filled with water. So we'll say, remember, we said, we'll contrast in just a moment. But now, by land, even if the cleft is not filled with water, it's still not counted as part of the base core. And technically speaking, the buyer could void the sale because of its existence. What's the logic of here? We'll say, my time, Papa, the fee she'en Adam wrote set she'yitain es ma'osa b'sada achos v'yira lo kishnayim u'kishlosha makomos. Because also, the assumption is that when a person buys a piece of land, he wants it to be and to look contiguous. What's the problem? If I buy land and there's a big cleft in the middle that goes down 10 tefachim, or there's a big rock elevation that goes up more than 10 tefachim, then what happens? Essentially, it looks and it might even practically divide my field. That's not what a person wants out of a field. I will say, especially if a person is buying it for agricultural purposes. Therefore, the existence of this cleft or this rock elevation that is more than 10 tefachim in nature has the ability to totally void the sale. So says the Gemara, Hachamai. So now, we'll say, now watch this. So now, what we've done is we have two cases. We have on one hand Hekdish. So we'll say, what's the case by Hekdish? So interestingly enough, what it comes down by Hekdish, if you look at the Rashi Hachamai, Kabikidush Ishim Hayubo Slam in the Kaim Shal Yutvachim, Venamalayim Mayim. So we'll say, listen to this. So when it comes to Hekdish, what we've established is the following. By Hekdish, if you have a cleft that's more than 10 Tvachim, but it's not filled with water, in other words, it's usable space, then what? Then the maaseh is counted as part of the field. That's the law by Hekdish. It's only if it's filled with water that it's not usable, that it's not counted as part of the field. Yet, by real estate sales, what's the halacha? If it's more than 10 tefachim, even if it's not filled with water, it what? It's not counted as part of the land. So by Hekdish, again, assuming nothing's filled with water, by Hekdish, a cleft of more than 10 tefachim, so you remember, whatever we say for a cleft applies for an elevation, is counted as part of the field. By real estate sale, it's not counted as part of the field. Asks the Gemara, by Hekdish, mai. So we'll say, Hacha, mai. So we'll say, what does it mean by Hekdish? By Kiddushin. Now watch this. If a man goes ahead and says to a woman, so become Mikudashes to me, Hare at Mikudashes, the Amanas Shiyeshli base core. Become Mikudashes to me on the condition that I have a core of land. I have a core of land. And I will say, what happens? He takes it to the field, and then what is there in the middle of the field? There's a cleft of 10 tefachim, so the shaila is she mikudeshes or not? In other words, do we compare kiddushin to hegdish, and we say that the existence of the cleft of 10 tefachim is fine, as long as what? Right? It's not filled with water. Or do we say, no, that kiddushin is like a real estate transaction, and the existence of the cleft takes away from the base core area, to which the Gemara says, to which the Gemara, lehekdish midamin Allah, or lemecher midamin Allah, to which the Gemara says, mistabra lehekdish midamin Allah. It would appear ultimately again that we compare kiddushin to hekdish. The Amr, why I will say the Amr law, because he could say to her, ana tarachna vizarana umaisina. Because a man could say to the woman, look, the cleft, it's not your problem. I promise you, it's a plantable area. I'm going to exert myself. I'm going to plant it. I'm going to harvest it. I'll bring home the food. You need not worry yourself with it. Therefore, again, the halacha is that if a man says to a woman, Hariat mikudesh as yamanashi yeshli beis kor, and there's a cleft in the land, we compare kiddushin to hekdish, and as long, ultimately, again, as the cleft is not filled with water, even if it's more than 10 tefachim deep, it's considered to be usable area, and therefore the kiddushin will be good. But I will say, by real estate transactions, this actually, the Shulchan Aruch codifies this halacha lemaisa, by real estate transactions, the existence of the 10 tefach cleft, right, whether it's filled with water or not filled with water, ultimately, again, could invalidate the sale, says the Mishnah.
Even by Hekdish, it's reckoned separately from the rest of the field, though, right? Even though it's part...
Correct, it's recognized as its own area. Correct. But it's Hekdish. It's Hekdish, but its Hekdish status, correct, is separate and distinct from the rest of the field, says the Mishnah. Well, so now we're going to get into an interesting sugya. I mean, it's all interesting. Yeah. Says the Mishnah, Rabbi Meir Omer, Kol Tnai. What's wrong?
I'm not checking the attendance.
I'm sorry?
Getting the numbers.
You're getting the numbers? Are they in yet?
Yeah.
How are we doing today?
7
today. So, okay. Says still early. Says the Mishnah. Rabbi Meir says the following. Kol tenai she'enu kitnai b'nei Gad u'b'nei Ruven. So we'll say any condition, any tenai, that is not like the tenai of b'nei Gad u'b'nei Ruven. So we'll say, what are we referring to over here? Referring to the fact that when we went into Eretz Yisrael, it's actually very, very l'maisa. So he went into Eretz Yisrael. So remember again, so God and Ruven wanted to settle in the Transjordanian lands, right? They did not want to cross over into Eretz Yisrael proper. Rather, they wanted to go ahead and remain in the Transjordanian lands. Why? Because, again, they had large flocks, and the Transjordanian area is a well-watered area, very good for flocks. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, fine. Now remember, again, Bosa, if you remember to the parasha, so Moshe Rabbeinu is exceptionally nervous when he hears this. Why? Because he thinks that it's Meraglim take two, right? He thinks, oh my gosh, I can't believe this. It's unraveling again. They don't want to go into Eretz Yisrael. And of course, that was not their intention. And Bnei Gad and Bnei Ruben says, we're going to fight. We're going to go into battles. Moshe Rabbeinu does something very interesting. Moshe Rabbeinu says, okay, if you go into Canaan and you fight with your brethren, you will inherit your portion in the Transjordanian area. But Moshe Rabbeinu does is something very interesting. He does what's called a Tanai Kafel, a double Tanai. We'll say a double Tanai means when you say the Tanai both in the positive and the negative. So what he says to Bnei Gad and Bnei Ruben is, if you go in and you fight alongside your brethren, you will be given these areas by the Jordan River. But if you don't go in and fight with your brethren, you will not get these areas. So we'll say, so it's interesting that Moshe Rabbeinu spoke to us. Now, we'll say, now the truth is, To every parent, this makes sense because this is pretty much how you have to speak to your kids every single day. Right? This is what I want you to do, and if you don't, everything is a Tanai Kafel. But it's interesting that Moshe Rabbeinu does this with Klal Yisrael. So Rabbi Meir understands, Rabbi Osai, that what Moshe Rabbeinu is giving us is the paradigm for a Tanai. So Rabbi Meir Omer, Kol Tanai She'enu Kitanai B'nei Gad B'nei Ruven, Eno Tanai. Any Tanai, any condition that is not like the condition of Bnei Gad and Bnei Ruven, which means the Tanai Kafel, phrased in the positive and the negative, is not a valid Tanai. So remember, we saw this sugya in Gittin, if you remember again. There are many things that are learned from this Tanai. It's not just Tanai Kafel, it's not just positive and negative, but many of the formulations we learn from this. Shne'emar, Vayomra Aleim, Im Ya'ru Bnei Gad and Bnei Ruven, is because first Moshe Rabbeinu says, if Bnei Gad and Bnei Ruven go and fight alongside their brethren in Canaan, then they will get these lands. Uksiv, Ve'im lo Ya'ru Chalutzim, and if they do not go in armed and fight with their brethren in Canaan, then they will not receive these lands. So therefore, Bimeir says, this is the paradigm. Every single Tanai must have the positive and the negative. Rabbi Hanina ben Gamliel Omer, Tzarech HaDavar, excuse me, Rabbi Hanina ben Gamliel Omer, Tzarech HaDavar Liomro, no. Moshe Rabbeinu is not creating a paradigm for a Tanai. In other words, you don't need a Tanai Kafel, says Rabbi Hanina ben Gamliel. You don't need it, you don't need, a Tanai is fine, even if it's just phrased in the positive or the negative. You don't need both. So why did Moshe Rabbeinu double it? To which the Gemara says, "Shil Moli came Yesh b'Mashma Shafilu be'Eretz Kinan Lo Yinchalu." So also, this is actually very interesting because Rabbi Hanina said, Moshe Rabbeinu had to say like this. Moshe Rabbeinu said, if you would have just said, if you go and you fight with your brethren, if you go and you fight with alongside your brethren in Canaan, then what? Then you will inherit the Transjordanian lands. So we'll say, so that, what does that sound like? Had he just said the positive, that would make it sound like what? That would make it sound like if they fight, they'll get the Transjordanian lands. And if they don't fight, nothing. Nothing. Maybe it means nothing. Maybe that's what it means. To which Moshe Rabbeinu says, and if you don't fight, you won't get the Transjordanian lands. But what's the mashmos of that? The mashmos of it, but you'll still get a portion in Canaan. In other words, that you want something extra. You want to get these portions. You want something different. So fine. If you fight, you'll get this something different. But had Moshe Rabbeinu just said it in the positive, I would have thought, if you fight, you get your Transjordanian lands, and if you don't fight, you get nothing. Therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu phrases the negative to say, and if you don't fight, you don't get the Transjordanian lands. But you will get a normal nachalo, you will get a normal portion in Eretz Canaan proper. Says the Gemara, Shabbosai, fundamental machlokis, Rabbi Hanina ben Gamliel and Rabbi Meir, as to how to understand the Tanai Moshe Rabbeinu. According to Rabbi Meir, the Tanai is a paradigm. Every Tanai must be a Tanai Kafel, positive and negative. Rabbi Hanina ben Gamliel says, no, this is not a paradigm. Moshe Rabbeinu just had to make it clear that if Bnei Gad and Bnei Ruven do not fight, they still get a portion in Canaan. So says the Gemara, Shabbir Kamali, Rabbi Hanina ben Gamliel, Rabbi Meir, So Rechani ben Gamliel is saying good. He's making a valid statement to Rabbi Meir. No. Rabbi Meir says no. Isak adaitcha, lav tenai kapu udasa, So Rabbi Meir says, Rabbi Chani ben Gamliel, you're wrong. Because if you think at the end of the day that the pasuk is not coming to teach me tenai kapu, then what? Lichtov ve'im lo yavru v'ne'achzu b'sochachem. Then let Moshe Rabbeinu simply say, and God in Ruvain, if you don't go and fight with your brethren, you will inherit a land within your brethren, within your midst. Be'eretz Kinaan Lamali. We'll say, why did Moshe Rabbeinu have to say the phrase Eretz Kinaan? All he needed to say was, Ve'no'achzu b'sochachem. You will inherit within them. We'll say, look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says, last Rashi on the daf, Lichto be'im lo ziyavru v'nachzu b'sochachem. Al korchach hayisi mefarsho shim lo yavru lo yafsidu balam denu. We'll say, if Moshe Rabbeinu just said, if you don't pass over the Jordan and fight alongside your brethren, v'nachzu b'sochachem, you will inherit in their midst. All I need is that phrase. And what does that mean, Rabbosai? Eretz Kinaan. You don't need to say Eretz Kinaan. Why does the pasuk still have to say Be'eretz Kinaan? Why does it have to add in that phrase? To which the Gemara says, top of Samach Aleph on the base. So Shema Mina, but tonight Kafu Udasa. So therefore, that extra phase Eretz Yisrael is coming to teach me what is ultimately coming to teach me tonight Kafu. He's coming to teach me that one requires a double Tnayas.
No fighting still inherits. That's
Everybody gets a portion. Everybody. Let's say you had a shevet that just said we're not fighting. We're conscientious objectors, whatever it is. You know, we're not, so they still get a portion. Look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says, Rulamali, Beretz Kinaan, Demasha Mi'uta, Lemi'uti Shlo Yitlu Beretz Gilad, Kinaan Get Chalkam Sheretz Kinaan. So we'll say, so therefore again, Rabbi Meir therefore says, Rabbi Chanina Ben Gamliel, if you are right, that you don't really need a Tanai couple, if that's the case, the Pasuk Moshe Rabbeinu could have just said, Vim Lo Ya'avru Rabbeinu Achsu B'Sochachem, why do you have an extra phase of Eretz Kinaan? Oh, that's to teach me what? That's to teach you that a Tanai couple is absolutely necessary. Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel Amar, Ilo Kasav Rachmana Beretz Kinaan, Hava Aminu Beno Achsu Besochachem Beretz Gilad, Aval Eretz Kinaan Klal Lo, to which Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel says, no, I'll tell you why. Because Rabbi Meir, had Moshe Rabbeinu just said, Beno Achsu Besochachem, that you will inherit in the midst of the people, I would have actually thought that what that means is, if you don't fight, you get a portion in Eretz Gilad, but you don't get a portion in Eretz Kinaan at all. And therefore, again, I'm sorry?
Where is that?
Right over the Jordan River. Right, they crossed over the Jordan. Remember, we were standing there, right, where Klal Yisrael crossed over into the Jordan River. On the other side of the Jordan River is what's called Eretz Gilad, Transjordanian land. So I might have thought again that Lemaisa at the end of the day, that if they don't fight, they just get a portion Eretz Gilad, but in Eretz Kinaan, not at all. Mm-hmm. And therefore, again, the pasuk has to say no, but no achzu in Eretz Kinaan. Rabbi Meir b'sochachem, kol heicha de'isluchu mashma. Rabbi Meir, on the other hand, will say no, that's not true. Meaning, even had the pasuk not said the Eretz Kinaan, the word b'sochachem means that wherever Klal Yisrael inherits, Reuven and God would inherit as well. So Tanya, it was, now we have a good braiso. Let me give you a comparison. Let me explain to you. Let me give you a mashal to what this can be compared to. What could it be compared to? The Adam Shay Mechalik Nechas of Lebanon. So let's listen to this. This whole thing can be compared to a person who was distributing his wealth, distributing his property to his sons. And what did he say? Amar Ploni Bini Yoresh Sada Plonis. So my first son, we'll leave aside oldest son right now. My first son, he's going to inherit field so-and-so. Upright field A. Ploni bini yiresh sodet plonis. My second son will get field B. So we'll say he's dividing up his assets among his sons. Uploni bini, now my third son, here's the deal. Yitein masayim zuz viyoresh sodet plonis. He needs to give me 200 zuz. And if son number three gives me 200 zuz, then what? Then I will give him sede plonis. I will give him field C. Ve'im lo yitain. But if he does not give me 200 zuz, then what? Yoresh im echav b'shar nechosim. ultimately he'll inherit his brothers with the rest of the property. In other words, we'll say that according to Rechanim and Gamliel, what's happening in this mashal over here is the father wants to give son number three something special. But he needs son number three to invest in this special privilege. So what he says is, look, if you give me 200 zuz, I'll allocate for you this special field. But if you don't give me 200 zuz, then what? You're not going to get cut out, chas v'shalom. You'll inherit together with the rest of your brethren. But what? You may not get what it is exactly that you want. Rabbi Hanina ben Gamliel compares this, ultimately, again, to what happened with Klal Yisrael and Moshe ben Rabbosei. Look at Rashi. Rashi is l'ma davar doma. Kach sha'ar ha-shvatim yitlu eretz kinan u'shnei shvatim ilu ya'abru esayardin l'mochama. Tahinu dumya diyitin lahem asayim zuz. V'yitlu eretz ha-gilad v'im lo ya'abru lo yafsidu chalkam eretz kinan. Dahinu shar nechasim. So Rabbi Hanina ben Gamliel says this much was like what happened with Gad and Reuven. Moshe ben who says to the rest of the shvatim, all of you have your portions. B'nei Gad and B'nei Reuven, you want the Transjordanian lands. That's fine. Give me 200 zuz. They will say, what's the 200 zuz? What's the 200 zuz? Fight in the war. Right? That's your investment. In other words, you need to put in an investment into this. Your investment is your willingness to fight alongside your brethren. And if you put in your investment, your 200 zuz, your willingness to fight, then what? Then you get your portions in Eretz Gilad. To which the Gemara says, Mi garam lo liare shemecha v'shar nechasim, kefei lo garam lo. So I'll say, ultimately, again, What allows him ultimately to go ahead and receive a portion with the rest of his brothers is the fact that ultimately, again, the Tanai is coupled. So the Gemara says, Kfeilo garamlo, v'halo damya, mashal maslisim. But says the Gemara, I don't understand. This mashal is not comparable to the Mishnah. Why is it not comparable to the Mishnah? Because hasam katani, yesh b'mashma, shafilu b'aretz k'nan lo yinchulu, amok feila le'aretz gilad nami mahani. Because we also remember again, in the Mishnah Bosai, we entertain the Havamina that one of the possible ways that we thought about this case is that if B'nai Gadim and Reuven would not have fought alongside their fellow Shvatim, then what? That they would not inherit anything. They would not inherit Shafilu Be'eretz Kenan Lo Yinchulu. Meaning that's the Havamina. Bosai, if you think about it, when Moshe Rabbeinu says the phrase in the positive, if you go and you fight alongside your brethren, you will get this portion, you could easily infer from that what? That if they don't fight, what's the Halacha? Right? Nothing. Therefore, again, in the case of the Mishnah, by Moshe Rabbeinu, by the Shvatim, the doubled Tanai doesn't just help Legabe Eretz Gilad, but it helps Legabe everything. In other words, V'hacha, katani mi garam lo liyarishim echav, b'shar nechasim kfeilu garam lo, alma kfeil l'shar nechasim u'dikamahani. So we'll say, interestingly enough, by Moshe Rabbeinu Rabosai, the Havamina is, if you would have just said in the positive, it could be they wouldn't have inherited anything. Over here, in the Mashal, the Tanai Kafel ultimately helps for Shar Nechasim as well, because we also remember, again, without the Tanai Kafel, also by the brothers, so one would have thought maybe the third brother doesn't have a portion either, meaning if he doesn't invest, Kamashal, the Tanai Kafel helps to give him his original portion as well. Lo Kasha, to which the words, it's not a contradiction. Ha Mikamei Dinei Malei Rabbi Meir Ben Achzu, Ha Lebasu Dinei Malei Rabbi Meir Ben Achzu. To which the Gemara says, there are two different stages here. Before, the Mishnah is referring to before the exchange between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Hanina Ben Gamliel. Remember again, Rabbi Meir had this statement. This is at the beginning of the Gemara. So before the Mishnah is talking about, the Mishnah is before Rabbi Meir responded with the argument of Beno Achzu, and the Bryce is talking about after Rabbi Meir responded with the argument of Beno Achzu. So therefore, again, the Bryce and the Mishnah are not contradictory at all. Rather, again, they're referring to different stages in the argument. Fine. So Bishlam the Rabbi Meir, Hainu Dichsev. So we'll say, so now, what we're faced with over here, understand, what's the takeaway? The takeaway is, there's a fundamental machlokes as to how you have to structure a Tanai. Rabbi Meir holds that Moshe Rabbeinu, let me say it differently, what does everyone agree with? Everyone agrees with the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu made a Tanai kafel. He made a doubled Tanai, meaning that he phrased the Tanai, the condition, both in the positive and the negative. Why does everybody agree with that? Because it says it in the Torah, right? Because certain things he can't argue with. He says it. What's the machlokes? The machlokes is why. The machlokes is why. So Rabbi Meir understands that why did Moshe Rabbeinu make a Tanai kafel? Why? It's a paradigm. It's creating a paradigm because he's teaching us that every single Tanai must be doubled. If you if you want the tonight to be effective, it must be phrased in the positive and in the negative. And according to Rabbi Meir, if you don't double your tonight, then what happens, Rabbi Osai? Then the tonight is simply ineffective. The tonight just falls by the wayside. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, no, no, no. The reason Moshe Rabbeinu had to make a tonight kafal over here was why? Because in the event that Moshe Rabbeinu did not double the tonight, the Havamina would have been that what? That if Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven don't fight alongside their fellow Shotim, then what? Then they get nothing. They get nothing. Therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu had to make the tonight kafal to say, hey guys, just understand, this condition is only about the Transjordanian lands. Should you decide not to fight at all, you still get a portion in Eretz Canaan. But according to Shem Gamliel, the Tanai is not at all here to create a paradigm. It's just to avoid a misunderstanding. Now the Gemara says like this. So we'll say, now we're going to take this machlokes between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel about the nature of a Tanai, and we're going to plug it into different scenarios. So Bishlam Rabbi Meir, Hanu Dichsiv, Im Tetiv Seis, Vim Lo Seitiv LePesach Chatos Roveis. So we'll say, this is in the conversation between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Kayim. So God says to Kayim, this is after, again, HaKadosh Baruch Hu accepts Hevel's carbon and does not accept Kayin's carbon. Kayin's all upset. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Kayin, look, here's the deal. Im Seitiv Seis, if you better yourself, you'll be lifted up. Vim Lo Seitiv, if you don't better yourself, LePesach Chatos Roveis, sin crouches by the door. So says the Gemara, according to Rabbi Meir, I understand why HaKadosh Baruch Hu said this to Kayin, in the positive and the negative. Why? Because that's how you make a Tanai. Every Tanai, for it to be binding, has to be in the positive and the negative. Rabbi Chanina, Lamali, but according to Rabbi Chanina, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu have to phrase it in the positive and the negative? Meaning, just say one way. Just say one way, and I can infer the other from it. To which the Gemara says, no. Sagadait Chanina, Im Seitiv Igra, Im Lo Seitiv Lo Igra Velo Dina, because I'm going to have to say the following. If HaKadosh Baruch would have just said to Kain, Im Teitiv Seis, if you improve yourself, you'll be lifted up. I would have thought like this. Maybe what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was saying is, if I improve myself, there's reward. And if I don't improve myself, nothing. No reward, no punishment. Therefore, Kamash HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to say, no. V'im lo seitiv, if you don't improve yourself, LePesach Chatos Roveis. So both say there's no such thing as parif, right? If you don't improve yourself, then what? Then lemaisa, at the end of the day, sin is crouching at the door. Yeah. So the Gemara goes weiter. Bishon Rabbi Meir, Hainu Dechsev, As Tinokeme Alasi. So we'll say, Parshas Chayisara. This is by the Shavua that Avraham Avinu made Eliezer take. So he said to Eliezer, take a Shavua that you're going to go to my father's, to my father's home, to my homeland, to find a wife from my husband. To find a wife for my son. Then you'll go ahead. So he made him take a Shavua. And then he says, and if you go ahead and you go to my father's home, then you will be freed ultimately again from the Shavua. So we'll say, take a look at Rashi. Rashi says over here, Bishlam Rabbi Meir, it's actually Rashi's fourth line up from the bottom of Rashi. Bishlam Rabbi Meir, Damar Michlala Lo Shaminan. Because remember, Rabbi Meir holds that you don't infer anything. You don't say Michlala Vatashamin. You don't infer a negative from a positive or a positive from a negative, but everything must be stated explicitly. So according to Rabbi Meir, who says that we don't infer anything, Hainu Dichsev Astino Keme Alasi, then, because remember, Avraham Avinu was saying, Asin Kemilasi means, if you go to my father's home, and they won't give you a wife for my son, then you are freed from the Shavua. Lefi, Sheshbio, Im lo el beisi, el beisa vitelech, Tachol alecha Shavua, Umechlala lo shamina dim telech lo sachol. So meaning, Avraham Avinu makes Eliezer take a Shavua, and the Shavua is, Im lo selech el beisa, that you have to go to my father's home. And then Avraham Avinu says, and if you go to my father's home, and they won't give you a wife for my son, then you are freed from the Shavua. So why do I need both phraseologies? Why do I have to say both? So according to Rabbi Meir, it makes sense, because according to Rabbi Meir, we'll say every tonight must be phrased in the positive and in the negative. According to Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, we'll say, why do I need that last statement? It's trich, you need it, why? I would have thought, because I'm not that the guy, Avraham Avinu was telling Eliezer, listen, as long as the girl wants to come, even if her family is against it, bring her, even against the will of the family. Bless you. Therefore, again, Kamashalan, that is not the case. Im lo sova isha lamali, if the girl doesn't want to come, why do I need that phrase? Istrich sakadait chamina hecha denecha lehud ledido velo necha lo ledido naisi val karcha. I might have thought that Eliezer, Avram saying to Eliezer, if you find the girl, who's the right girl, even if she doesn't want to come, but her family's willing to send her, take her even against her will. Kamash malano. Kamash malano. Avram Avinu was saying to Eliezer, this whole thing only works if what? If Lamai says she wants it and her family wants it. Then, as tina keme alasi, if the girl wants it and the family wants it, then you could bring her. But if at the end of the day either party is against this, then this is not the right shidduch. One more example, I will say. Bishlom the Rabbi Meir Hanan d'ksiv im b'chukosai teleichu v'im b'chukosai timasu. So, Bosei, remember the Torah says im b'chukosai teleichu. If you walk in the way of my statutes, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'll reward you. In v'chukosai timasu, if you degrade or despise or make disgusting my mitzvahs, there'll be punishments. So according to Rabbi Meir, I understand why I need both phraseologies. I need the positive and I need the negative. Because in order for any tanai to be binding, according to Rabbi Meir, it has to be what? It has to have both the positive and the negative. But, El Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel lamali, Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, why does he need the positive and the negative phrasing? Remember, according to Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, we should be able to infer the negative from the positive. In other words, just tell me, tell me, if I walk in the ways of God, I keep the mitzvahs, and God says He'll reward me, I can infer from that what? What? That if I violate the precepts of the Torah, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will punish me. Why does it have to be phrased explicitly? Well, say, Toshdi Gemara says something amazing. So Gemara says, it's trich. I'll tell you why, says Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel. Sakadai tchamina imbechukosai teilechu bracha. So I might have thought, because Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, had the Torah just phrased it in the positive, I would have said like this. If you found the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, bracha, beautiful blessing. But imbechukosai tim asu, lo bracha, velo klala. But I would have thought that's what? That if you don't follow the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then what? No bracha, no klala. Right? It's part of, in other words, that if you follow the mitzvahs, you get reward. And if you don't follow the mitzvahs, no big deal. It's a parav net effect. Kamash malon, that is not the case. Kamash malon, I will say that halacha lemaisa again. Kamash malon, that there is reward, there is schar and onesh. That there is reward for following the mitzvahs, but there's ultimately an onesh for a violation of the mitzvahs as well. I will say, we'll stop over here for today. So again, remember, we're leaving off in the midst of this machlokes. So we still have, I will say, you understand, every once in a while, you stumble upon one of these yesodistic machlokes, and this is one of them. Rabbi Meir saying, every tanai must be a tanai kafel, a double tanai. Tanai is only effective if it's phrased in the positive and the negative. Learning it out from Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu is the paradigmatic Tanai maker, everything follows his Tanai. Rabbi Shimon is saying no. Rabbi Moshe Rabbeinu was just making a double Tanai ultimately in order to what? In order to ensure that B'nai Gad, B'nai Reuben realize that even if they don't fight, they have a portion in Eretz Canaan proper. But Moshe Rabbeinu is not trying to create the paradigmatic Tanai. I, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, but there are, I'm sorry, I keep saying Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Who is it? Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, thank you. Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel. We keep bringing examples of situations where there is a double Tanai. There's always a reason. Sometimes the Torah goes out of its way to double the Tanai. Often it's just to avoid any kind of erroneous mindset. But Lamaisa, again, as a paradigm, a Tanai need not be coupled. Need not be coupled. I made that a verb. Need not be coupled. And Miras Hashem will continue with that machlokes tomorrow.